Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Hey, listen, nerds. You're listening to the Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week podcast with Joe and Matt.
Kids, my name is Matt Baum, and it is my distinct pleasure to welcome you to a holiday edition of the Answer of the Week. I've got Joe Patrick on the...
Labor Day is barely a holiday.
Oh, it still counts.
I've got Joe Patrick on the FaceTime, as you kids like to call it. It's an internet thing. We really like it. Call me from beautiful Bellevue. Joe, say hi.
Hello, everyone.
You may recognize us from the Two-Headed Nerd Comic Book Podcast. It's our other show that we do together in the same room. Today we'll be separate, but we're still going to have fun with it, right?
Totally. We always have fun.
So what happens is Joe Patrick puts the question of the week up on our forums every Sunday, and then you guys email us in your MP3 answers or call us at 402-819-4894, the Ziggurat direct line. We have a little red phone. It lights up and beeps. It's really cool. And then we play your answers on the show. But before we can do that, Joe Patrick has to remind me every week, what the hell did we ask these guys?
It's been so long, I actually have no idea. Oh, wait, I do remember. Z-List Heroes. Who is your favorite Z-List hero? The lamest of the lame that you can't help but love. Who are they? What's their deal? And why do you love them so much?
Fantastic. Let's get right to it. Cameron Labrillo called us. He had a little apology he wanted to issue first because he did talk some smack on the internet about this possibly being a previous question of the week. Turns out somebody else asked it. We're not gonna name names, but it was comic therapy. Let's get right to it. Cameron Labrillo, what you got?
Hey, two-headed nerd, this is Carl Smith calling in with my answer to the question of the week. At first, was pretty confused by this. I apologize for that on Twitter. I thought you guys were recycling a question we just had. But then our compliance officer pointed out that it was, in fact, the heroes, not the villains this time. So I kind of racked my brain and came up with one that I don't really consider a Z-list, but I suppose by number of appearances and high-profile or low profile, I should say, of the titles that he's been in. One of my favorite characters is probably a Z-List, and that's Bug from Micronauts. He had a much bigger role in Micronauts, The New Voyages, and apparently, as I'm finding out now, as I dip my toe into Guardians of the Galaxy, he had a stint as one of the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is, I'm looking forward to seeing and hoping that it's awesome. One reason I liked Bug is because I love wacky science fiction aliens and all that. And I like the idea of a guy with like mantis slash grasshopper anatomy, you know. I just thought that was pretty rad. And it reminded me a lot of one of the races that was in a game I played with my friends called Star Frontiers. I believe it was TSR. Or one of those companies that was cranking out role-playing games back in the heyday. And every time we rolled on that, I always rolled the same race and basically made it a Bug analog once I saw Bug in the comic. Anyway, he's probably Z-List because I don't think too many people are clamoring for a revival of Micronauts The New Voyages, but there it is. Thanks, guys.
I love Bug. Totally,
I do too.
Totally love Bug. And when they brought him back, the Guardians, I was so excited, and I was a little bummed out that he didn't come back again in the latest iteration of the Guardians.
Yeah, same here. I mean, and you know what, Carl? That's the thing about Z-List characters, or, you know, Z-List is harsh, but, like, they don't seem like Z-List characters to the people that love them, and I totally get it.
Oh, but they are. I think the whole idea is if you go to the comic shop and ask 10 people, and less than, we'll say, 5 of them can even know who the character is a Z-lister. You know, they're like, there's no doubt about it. And Bug, kind of an old guy thing, you know?
Sure, but on the other hand, how many people will say that their favorite character is somebody like that instead of saying Batman or Green Lantern or whatever?
Sure, and I get it. Still, very much a Z-lister. Created by Bill Mantlo and Michael Golden. First appearance, Micronauts number 1, 1979.
And as far as people clamoring for a return of the Micronauts, I'm right there behind you, buddy.
Oh, love it. Love the Micronauts. Acro year. Or a Croyer. Acro-year. Or a Croyer, as some people call it.
Carl referenced the THN compliance officer, who I believe we determined was Keith Silva.
He's our compliance officer? Okay, that makes sense. That's good.
But the thing is that Keith Silva doesn't care about continuity, so he doesn't really pay attention.
Oh, well, how do you get this job?
I don't know.
Is it just because he's detail-oriented? Is that it? Like, we got that far on his resume? Well, he's detail-oriented. Hire him.
I think he's just been hanging around long enough that we just, you know, we bestowed a title on him.
You know who does care about continuity? Randy Andrews. Let's see what he's got for us here.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. This is Randy Andrews emailing in for the question of the week. This week you asked, what is your favorite Z-list hero? Well, this week, I'm going to have to say it's Howard the Duck. Yes, Howard the Duck. He came through into our world by means of facing Man-Thing. He came through that portal, and even after that, he encountered several heroes and villains and defeated them. He faced against Throg, the Overmaster. He met Korak, the Barbarian. He met Jennifer Kale. He materialized even in Cleveland, Ohio, and battled Garko, the Man-Frog. Yes, he is definitely a Z-list hero, but he's so prevalent. He's throughout the entire Marvel Universe. He's kind of a hero that gets forgotten. And one thing that I was looking at, I was reading up on him a little bit, and I noticed that he even had a point where he went to the North Pole and Santa Claus had sold out to Hydra, and so Howard had to save the day. It was just hilarious. So yes, that's my Z-list hero this week, and the music you're hearing in the background, of course, is the theme to Howard the Duck. So that's it this week, guys. Hope you like my answer. Talk to you later, and check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackalley.blogspot.com, and we'll see you in a week. Bye for now.
I don't know anyone who does not love Howard the Duck.
Yeah, I mean, like, the idea is so ridiculous that I think it's impossible not to love. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like, it's not like Howard the Duck has ever done anything. Now, I will say, Randy Andrews said he defeated all these characters, and it was sort of like Howard the Duck sort of defeated people the same way like Inspector Gadget kind of defeated people, like accidentally. Usually things would happen. Sure. You know? Like he's grabbing a bunch of levers or something, going wah, and like something falls over on the bad guy, and he's like, looks like I won that fight, you know.
I love Howard. I think that's a great answer.
I think it's a wonderful answer.
Did he play like something from the score of Howard the Duck?
Or oh, was yeah. It the, no, that was
Leah. Was it the band
that was Leah Thompson's band singing the Howard the Duck theme?
Awesome.
Cherry Bomb. They were called
Cherry Bomb.
They were called Cherry okay. Bomb, and I can only assume they were named after the Runaways song Cherry Bomb. Leda Ford, the band.
Sure.
Yeah, they're one of those 80s quote punk rock bands, which means you dressed like Cyndi Lauper and played adorable pop music. You know what I mean? But you were a punk rocker, right? No.
A keytar was probably involved.
Oh, absolutely. I think they all had keytars. I think they were a keytar band. In fact, I believe Leah Thompson played a keytar, if I'm correct. I don't know. Someone correct me if I'm wrong on that. All right.
you're probably right.
We're off on a tangent. Howard the Duck. Excellent, excellent choice. Moving right along. Let's see who we've got next here.
Hey, Two-Headed Nerd. It's Chris Miles calling in my answer of the week. My favorite Z-list hero. Bo from Burt Wieners finally let me out of the closet. I guess I let his cornflakes get a little too soggy in his bowl of beer. But now that I'm free from my punishment, I wanted to call and let you guys know my favorite Z-list hero. I was really going to go with the Red Panda, Canada's number one superhero. But he'll always be A-list in my heart. So I have to go with Tim Eldred's awesome Mac, better known as Grease Monkey. He's just an evolved gorilla, and he don't take no guff from anybody, and that's his superpower. He's mechanical whiz, and doesn't take any crap. He keeps his all-female fighter squadron afloat, kicking alien butt and saving humanity. Just one guy doing a thankless job, and that's why he's my favorite hero.
Grease Monkey is a comic book created by Tim Eldred. It was from Image Comics. So it was published by Kitchen Sink Press in the mid-90s and then reprinted by Image a few years later.
Okay. I have no idea what this is. I don't know anything
about
it.
Me neither. I've never seen it before.
Yeah.
That's a deep cut. Truly Z-list.
Now, he mentioned Red Panda. That's a monkey brain thing.
Is it?
Yeah. Red Panda is a monkey brain thing. Now, I'm acting like I'm all smart. I looked it up. It was like, that sounds familiar. It's a red. Yeah. Red Panda's monkey brain.
On the cover of Grease Monkey number one from Image, he is wearing a t-shirt that says the word crap with a red slash through it.
You don't take no crap. I
so
like that.
He truly does not take any crap.
I like how Chris gives us a disturbing view into the lives of the Burnt Wieners, the Expert Wieners podcast, which is apparently they all still live together, which is nice.
Yeah. You know what? I'm happy.
They
happy
stopped
for
the show, but they all live together. I think that's good.
I'm happy for the updates. Thank you, Chris.
All right. Let's get to our next call.
This is a welcome aboard.
Is this a welcome aboard? Another one on the
Zero. First timer, Josh Rector.
Hello there, Joe and Matt. My name is Josh, and for my first ever Answer of the Week response, I'm letting you all know that my favorite Z-list hero is none other than Nate Gray, a.k.a. X-Man. Originally introduced during the Age of Apocalypse event, Nate Gray was the genetically engineered son of Cyclops and Jean Grey, who was bred by Mr. Sinister to be a secret weapon against Apocalypse. But once AOA was finished, he found himself stranded in the mainstream Marvel Universe because of reasons. Doesn't really matter. What does matter is that Nate Grey's powers are basically the same telepathic and telekinetic combination that Jean Grey sports, but cranked up to insano Dark Phoenix Omega levels of power. The catch, of course, being that these powers are burning out and killing him, making X-Man's solo series in the mid and late 90s kind of like a Marvel universe of the MTV classic Dead at 21. And while my own connection to the character stems from he and I going through our angsty teen years at about the same time, the character took a turn towards the sublime in the year 2000 when Warren Ellis was given control of the book as part of the Counter-X initiative. Warren Ellis was paired with veteran writer Stephen Grant and then unknown artist Ariel Olivetti to re-envision Nate Gray as a, quote, telepathic mutant shaman for the 21st century, end quote. And while that tagline is absurdly bombastic, what Ellis did with the character was actually really amazing. The book resurrected Alan Moore's then-forgotten concept of the multiversal spiral and gave Nate the power to travel to alternate Earths, which essentially made him into a kind of X-Men Doctor Who. Now remember, this is a full 5 years before the Russell Davies reboot would send all of Tumblr's hearts aflutter, and at the time, no one was telling stories like this in mainstream comics. Those X-Men stories had giant, crazy ideas, existential crises, an entirely new perspective on traditional superhero morality, deeply beautiful and human moments, and of course, Nate Gray rocking a black trench coat and a tribal X-Men logo tattoo on his chest, because that's what was cool in the year 2000. The book was canceled in early 2001 as part of the Bob Harris, Joe Quesada editorial changeover, and the character was killed off. But I don't think it was an accident that it was former Doctor Who writer Paul Cornell who brought the character back in 2009's Dark X-Men miniseries. If you can, I highly recommend picking up any of the Warren Ellis or Paul Cornell X-Men stories, all of which are available in trade form at stores like Legend Comics and Coffee, and I will live in hope that Marvel one day sees the value in what they have with Nate and gives him another shot. But until then, thanks for listening to my answer. Good night and good luck.
Nice fidelity on that kid. That was good. A little bit of editing there too, you could tell. That or Josh doesn't need to breathe. I don't know.
One take Rector, they call him.
I liked it. And he's right. That Warren Ellis story with Nate Gray, when like he would walk around barefoot and burn footprints into the earth. And he didn't have to eat food and he didn't sleep. It was really cool. I loved that character.
Yeah, I love X-Man. I love the idea that the reason Nate Gray was so powerful was because Cable spent all of his energy fighting the techno-organic virus.
Yeah.
And without that virus, he would be like almost like a god.
Yeah, he was basically...
Nate Gray is Cable without the virus.
Yeah, and he was stupid powerful.
Yeah, I loved it. regarding the transfer from Age of Apocalypse. I do believe the Sugar Man was involved. Yeah. It's best not to think about it.
There was something weird. I don't remember. And it was just like a few of them got sucked through. The Sugar Man, Dark Beast, Nate.
Yeah, Nate. I think that might be about it.
Didn't Holocaust get sucked through too? Wasn't he around?
There was a Holocaust character, but I'm not sure if it was the same one or if it was just the main Marvel version.
I don't remember if it was like turned out to be like Mirror Universe or not. Regardless.
Yeah.
It's just gonna hurt your head if you get into that.
Great answer. Josh, thanks a lot for your call, buddy. And shout outs to Legend Comics and Coffee are always appreciated.
Welcome aboard, Joshua.
Hey, Joe and Matt. It's the TD Dubs calling in for the question of the week. So let's talk our Z-list heroes. You know, I'm a fan of G.I. Joe, so I decided to look for my favorite, lamest G.I. Joe hero. It came down to two people. There was Barbecue, the firefighter, who is this guy that wore this super ridiculous firefighter's costume. He looked like some really bad sci-fi character from the 50s. But the winner was Shipwreck and his pet parrot, Holly. Just super lame character, trying to make this sort of tough sailor dude that was kind of a cross between Popeye and the member of the Village People. Shipwreck didn't really do it for me. I liked him. He was good as a Z-list character, but overall, pretty lame in the G.I. Joe universe. So that's my answer for the week. And just wanted to let everyone know that I've been working on a comic book that's going to be on Kickstarter sometime in the not too distant future. So just dropping that. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Shipwreck somehow, impossibly, became like one of everybody's favorite action figures, even though
I love Shipwreck.
He was so lame. There was like nothing cool about him. He totally looked like gay sailor dude from the Village People, you know? My favorite Shipwreck analog was Shore Leave from the Venture Brothers.
Thanks! In the modern G.I. Joe comics, Shipwreck is reimagined as this kind of like tough-looking merchant marine kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, black turtleneck sweater, black stocking cap, looking all badass.
He's a badass.
I loved Shipwreck.
Yeah, just like good old fashioned shirt open, tattoo of an anchor, of you know, he's got a freaking parrot.
Life on the sea, man.
I'll tell you what, it gets lonely. I understand.
What happens on the high seas stays on the high seas.
I guess. Yeah, it's not gay if you're in the ocean. I think that's one of the rules.
Yeah, yeah. If you're like in
international waters, is that what you're looking for?
International
waters. Yeah, international waters, camping. Yeah, bank holidays. These are all things like if anything happens there, you're not gay. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Oh, did you let Casey know then about your plans for later today?
She knows. She knows all about this. Yeah. All right.
TD Dubs, let us know when your Kickstarter thing's ready.
Yeah, we'll talk. Definitely.
Comic pushers.
We know a couple of guys. All right, I'm going on the next one.
Hello, two-headed nerd. Shonix emailing in with my answer to the question of the week. Z-list heroes. I don't know if I've been watching a ton of Captain America Winter Soldier on Xbox. A ton. But immediately this hero came to mind because I really started to like him. I really kind of met him late in his career in the Marvel Universe. But it was new to me, and it was awesome at the time. But this is from the journalist Steve Rogers, and if anyone wants references, just give me a heads up on Twitter, and I'll tell you where I got them from. But if Bucky is considered the younger brother I never had, Jack Flagg is certainly a first cousin. 6'1", 210 pounds, blue-eyed, brown-haired, dyed red, white, and blue, Jack Flagg, Jack Harrison was his name. He got his super strength and stuff from the Hyde formula because him and his brother were part of Cap's like initiative to have, you know, like crime fighters in every city in the USA fighting the good fight. And he went toe to toe to the height with Serpent Society and got a little bit of the Hyde formula on him. So that's where he got his super strength. But I remember that issue. It was Cap 440 because I remember that cover. It's like Cap. I think they're underwater too. But he had to wear this armor because he was paralyzed at the time. But then you had Jack Flag and then Freeze Beard on the cover, and I think Falcon was in the issue as well. But I still don't think I've read it yet. But I remember that immediately when I was reading Thunderbolts. This was when Ellis was writing it, and Jack Flag got paralyzed by Bullseye. And I ran to that, you know, stack of stuff I needed to read, looked at the cover, laughed, and went back to reading my stuff. And then he came back into the series, wheelchair and all, fighting against King Blastar. Not in Thunderbolts, but I was reading all of the DNA stuff at the time. You know, the Cosmic Universe and Marvel was awesome. New life had been brought to it. So, yeah, he, you know, got fixed in Guardians of the Galaxy and fought. He was a Guardian. It was awesome. But at the time, I mean, I remember that cover and just that guy looks ridiculous. But I grew to really like him. I guess I haven't read him as Jack Flag back when he started, but I like him as the Jack Flag of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And I would consider him Z-list. So, yeah, Jack Flag, red, white, and blue hair. Great question. Talk to you guys next week. Peace.
Sean X just stole my answer.
That can't be true.
I am dead serious. Jack Flag was going to be my Z-list answer, and it is because of that Warren Ellis story, where, like, the Thunderbolts came. Jack Flag refused to, you know, register with the government. This was during the whole Registration Act. And the Thunderbolts came and like, well, this is going to be easy. We'll just wipe the floor with him. And he kicked a couple of their asses. It was great. And then he got paralyzed by Bullseye.
Well, there was also another character.
Yeah, it was the Indian guy that
American Eagle.
American Eagle, who like got away. American Eagle fought the Thunderbolts and won, basically. <Yeah. laughs>
The character arc of Jack Flag, first of all, nobody thought he'd ever be seen again after the 90s.
No.
But for him to show up in Thunderbolts and then have like a lengthy stint in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Is really amazing.
Awesome. In a wheelchair in Guardians of the Galaxy, like defending the Negative Zone prison from the Annihilation wave.
And I think he got better.
It was so good.
But I think he physically got better.
He was better, but like in the prison, they did something like he had like cybernetics or something that made him walk around in the prison. They did something. So they didn't work.
I don't recall.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Because he was back in the wheelchair.
That's an amazing answer.
That's a fantastic answer. So I'm going to my backup answer now. I'm not telling anybody.
Thanks as always, Sean.
Hey, it's Ryan Mount, a.k.a. Heroes on the Forums, calling in with my answer of the week for Z-List Hero. I was first introduced to this hero in Next Wave Agents of Hate number 11, back when I was getting back into comics and anything with Civil War on it, I was picking up because I wanted the whole set. And, you know, as I got into it, I realized it wasn't, but it was so much better. Although Next Wave is great altogether, I think if I had to pick one, it goes to the Machine Man, a.k.a. Aaron Stack. Aaron Stack was great. I remember I was excited when he came back in Miss Marvel a couple years after that. And then just any comic that he was in, I would pick it up. And I remember I actually fell in love with Steve Ditko because of his work on Machine Man. You know, I think Ellis kind of captured what was great. Brian Reed did too. I think it was the next logical step. And then they've tried to bring him back. He was in Red She-Hulk, and it was awful. They went back. But this is a book, somebody that would never, ever sell their own title. The only reason he got away with a solo series after the 70s, when everything was weird, was because they put an X in front of it in the 90s and called him X-51, which is awful, and I like to pretend that didn't happen. But I really, really love the character. He's weird. He's grumpy. He's moody. You know, it's kind of like a bro robot almost, but I don't know. There's more to him than that. And I kind of like it. And his, failure to really interact with, humans properly, although that's what he would like to do, has been the constant and what I like maybe most about the character. So yeah, that's my answer. Machine Man. All right. Talk to you guys soon.
I love Machine Man.
I love Machine Man too. That's a great answer. But I think everyone's favorite Machine Man is from the Agents of Hate. Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
No doubt.
Also, I think everyone in Next Wave counts as a Z-list character.
Absolutely. No doubt about that.
Ryan, thank you, as always, for your MP3. That is a great answer. We don't get enough Machine Man. I totally agree. Once they kicked him into Red She-Hulk, the bloom was off the rose.
Yeah.
That book was a turd.
Yeah.
I hope that someone can bring him back and do something really great with him.
Our final call from Mr. Jason Sachs. You may have heard him on another little show on the internet recently.
He gets around.
I feel a little bit like I'm obligated to pick a character from the 1970s because I wrote the American Comic Book Chronicles, the 1970s, along with a couple of great co-writers. But really, he would have been my choice anyway. Kilraven, the Warrior of the World, appeared for about 3 years in Amazing Adventures, mostly written by the amazing Don McGregor. Now, McGregor is a bit of a controversial figure in comics history. Among many other things, McGregor wrote very intensely. Don told me once that he wrote every story as if it would be the last story that he could possibly write. Because of that, he threw his soul into every moment that Kilraven lived. Kilraven was a warrior from a future world where the Martians had taken over the planet Earth. He was fighting to free Earth along with his band of comrades. The thing that made Kilraven special was that he cared, like deeply, seriously cared about everything. He wasn't some general leading his troops around. He wasn't some superhero just kind of swaggering and fighting and not really caring what was happening. He was the man who really invested of himself in everything that was happening. Kilraven was a friend, was a lover, was a man overall, a dreamer, a man in full, and also a great action warrior with kind of a ridiculous costume and flaming red hair. It's a beautiful series. It's got art by P. Craig Russell, who's a name that kind of passed away from comics history a bit, but his artwork is gorgeous on this series, especially if you can pick up the Kilraven graphic novel. He's got this incredible, sensuous line that just speaks of grandiosity and beauty and kind of a mythical sensuous space. This is all collected in an essential, the Essential Kilraven, which I believe is still in print. You can probably get for like $4 on Amazon. Can't recommend it highly enough. Kilraven may be a Z-level character. We may never really see him appear again. But these are amazing stories, especially if you can get through Don's amazing writing. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later. Bye.
Fun fact about Kilraven. Kilraven's alternate future is the same alternate future that leads to the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, I remember they established that. Also, deepest V-neck in comics. Goes all the way to his underpants.
And now you know what drives the heart of little Ora McWilliams.
Yes, Kilraven. What? Where
things are connected.
Where is Kilraven? How come he hasn't popped back up? They just kind of like, I remember there was a short Kilraven miniseries like that Joseph Michael Linsner did or something like that.
Yeah, there have been a couple of unsuccessful attempts to revive the character in the last like 15 years.
Yeah,
I know that Rob Liefeld worked on it or was going to work on it for a while. It never materialized or it didn't last. Kilraven is a weird character that's oddly tied into an H.G. Wells version of War of the Worlds, which is a weird thing to put into the Marvel Universe.
Right. Well, it was like one of those things where Marvel was experimenting with a lot of different things, like sort of taking old sci-fi and just sort of like weaving it into the Marvel U and then going, well, don't get me wrong, H.G. Wells' story was great, but you know what it needs? A swashbuckling superhero in boots and a really low V-neck. You know?
Can you even call it a V-neck? Isn't it more like a mandolier?
I guess. I don't know, but it had like shoulder pads. So, you know, I don't really know what to call it.
He's wearing like a dickie that only covers one shoulder. And then he's got like just the Martian Manhunter style. We call them mandoliers.
Yes.
And then there's the Rob Liefeld version where he's wearing a full shirt.
Yeah, like, I think you could make an argument for Killraven having one of the worst costumes in comics.
I can get behind that.
I think there's definitely an argument there. Okay, the Killraven that I'm picturing was from the Alan Davis, Mark Farmer Killraven miniseries. And that
that's the Mandaliers.
Yeah, literally, just like wearing, I don't know.
He's wearing suspenders with no shirt.
Suspenders and underpants, basically.
And really thigh-high boots.
But all the designs for him were just totally bizarre. There's a P. Craig Russell image that I'm looking at right now that looks like it is straight off the cover of a gay porn DVD.
That's what I was talking about with, like, it's the dickie that only covers one shoulder.
He is posed, and he is sexy, and he looks
hot. Is it the one where he's, like, holding the sword like this?
Yes, yeah, he's, like, holding it up in the air. Man, he is hot. Killraven, baby.
There was something in the comics not too terribly long ago. I believe it was probably in the Bendis Avengers books. Aura would know for sure, and I wish he was here to fact check me. But some of the storylines that they did in a couple of the books right after Siege, when it was like the heroic age and stuff, there was a lot of time travel stuff. And one of them essentially led to the birth of young Killraven in the modern day. The kid that becomes Killraven, it was born like today.
Okay.
And then, you know, 20, 30 years from now is when the Martians invade.
Right.
And Tom Cruise is forced to fight them off. Yeah. And they actually, they've actually planted those seeds in current books because somebody out there really wants Killraven to come back.
That's pretty cool. See, in my Steven Spielberg War of the Worlds, Tom Cruise becomes Killraven.
Oh, I love it.
Right? Right? He'd be great. I love it. Cruise would nail that. Favorite call. Let's get to it. Favorite call.
So I think I'm giving my favorite call to Chris Miles.
I'm going to Cameron Labrillo because I think I may have picked Bug had he popped into my head. I love Bug so much. Love that character. Mainly because he ended every sentence and began every sentence with tick.
Yeah, like he had this weird...
He'd be like, tick, like we gotta get out of here, like, tick!
His mandibles were clicking together.
Yeah. I also really like how they made him a sex machine in Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, he was irresistible to women. They loved Bug.
Hey, I mean, look at him.
He was hot. So who's your favorite D-list hero, Joe Patrick?
All right, so I tried to think of a better one. I tried to think of somebody more obscure, but the heart wants what the heart wants.
There you go.
My favorite Z-list character is Robbie Baldwin, aka Speedball.
Okay. Saw it coming. Miles away.
Member of the New Warriors, wrongfully accused of causing the disaster in Stanford, Connecticut that set off the Civil War.
Also wrongfully accused himself, as I recall.
Turned into a self-mutilating emo cover child.
Named Penance.
With a spiky suit with needles pointing into his business.
Also, this is the second character in the Marvel U to call themselves Penance.
Not the first, you're right.
Yep, the second. The first was the Generation X. Right. It was the sharp glass girl, whatever her name deal was.
Right. And I was so angry. I was so angry about what they did to him in Civil War and in the follow-up and in Warren Ellis's Thunderbolts, that Penance bullshit.
It was dumb.
When Avengers Academy rolled around and they kind of reverted him back to Speedball, you know, he'd kind of gotten help and gotten over it. I was so excited. And now he was back in the New Warriors and now the book is canceled. So
here we go.
But the reason I love Speedball, so here's the deal with Speedball. I am not following my own rules. Speedball is my favorite character. What's his deal? His deal is that he was exposed to energy from a dimension full of
balls.
Kinetic energy. Right.
The balls dimension.
I mean, essentially the Marvel version of the Speed Force, right?
Right.
And so it saturated his body and he gained the power to manipulate kinetic energy, but he couldn't control it. So at first, all it was it translated as bouncing, right? He couldn't be harmed by bullets or fists or baseball bats or falls from the tops of buildings. He ricocheted off of everything, bounced around, Speedball.
He was rubber, they were glue. It bounced off of him and stuck to You. Them.
Sure. And then in the original New Warriors series, they started to develop him more. They started to give him like a deeper personality. At first, he was just a Peter Parker ripoff created by or written and drawn by Steve Ditko. I don't remember if Steve Ditko wrote it. He definitely drew it. And in the New Warriors, they started to give him a personality. You know, he had more depth and the comic relief thing was just a mask. You know, not that he wasn't fun-loving and fancy-free, but he had, like, kind of a rough home life. They started to develop his powers more and explore what it really means to be able to manipulate kinetic energy. And so he'd occasionally, like, accidentally do things like punch Terrax across three states. Because he manifested all of his kinetic energy into a punch. So I really enjoyed what they started to do with that character. And it all just went so wrong in the early part of the 2000s with Civil War. And he's only finally gotten back to the character that he once was. And they're still referencing that Civil War stuff because I believe in New Warriors, he just manifested some sort of crazy power that's kind of like a holdover from his penance days. And so he has continued to grow, but I'm glad they got him back to where he was, even though his book is canceled. I'm hoping for him to pop up here and there. Speedball, he's my guy.
You know what? I'm proud of you for admitting that Speedball is, in fact, a completely Z-list character. I'm proud of you.
I have no illusions.
You grew up a little bit today, Joe Patrick, and I'm proud of you.
You know what? I like Night Thrasher too, so suck it.
Even more appropriate. Mine, I was going to pick Jack Flag. I really was, and so I'm going to go with my backup. All my backups were aliens for some reason. I thought about Chode. Or Chad. I love that character so much. I thought about the Green Man from Green Lantern, who I also love.
Oh, yeah.
Just like a green dude. And ultimately, I thought about Star Fox, too. I love Star Fox because he's just like sexy alien. That's his deal. Like, I'm super hot. Deal with it. But ultimately, I had to settle Beta Ray Bill, man. Beta Ray Bill. He was created by Walt Simonson. I remember the issue of Thor. I went to the Quick Shop where I used to buy comic books, and there was Thor, and on the cover was this horse face alien dude holding the hammer. Blew my mind. And I instantly thought, well, it's bad guy that it has the ability to hold Thor's hammer. This is going to be really, really bad. And slowly, and it seemed that way when they first introduced him, he kind of came off like maybe he's a bad guy. It was really well written because Simonson wanted to like give us the idea of like, this is a totally bizarre character that doesn't look like anyone else in the Marvel U. And whenever we get characters like that, they're always bad guys, but Bill was not. And we slowly learned that like, he's actually the champion of his people. He's a Corbinite, right? And his whole galaxy was destroyed. And it turned out later on, it had something to do with Surtur and Surtur fighting with Asgard and like something he did accidentally blew up their whole galaxy. So there was a ship called the Scuttlebutt, and it took it's just a ridiculous name, I know, and it took the remnants of the Corbinite race and basically protected them all and took Bill, who basically volunteered to become their champion, and several other Corbinites had done it, and there was like a surgery that they did to him that made him bigger and stronger, but it killed a bunch of them. Bill was one of the only ones that survived, basically, and so he became their champion. Their ship is flying around. Shield detects it. They go to check out what the deal is with it. He fights with some Shield agents. We think maybe he's a bad. And Thor has been banished at this time. He's not around Earth. The hammer is there, and Beta Ray Bill is able to pick it up. Boom. Basically gets all the powers of Thor. And gets called back to Asgard, and Odin is yelling at him, like, oh, I banished you to Earth, and da-da-da-da, and I've told you so many times, son. He's looking right at horse-faced alien dudes, and he thinks it's his kid for some reason. Confuse him for Thor. There's some discussion. They figure out this is not, in fact, Thor, but he's worthy enough to hold Thor's hammer. So now we have to have a big fight between him and Thor to see who gets to be Thor. They get in a fight, and this is in, like, Surtur's kingdom. They're fighting, you know, like, on little pieces of rock in the lava and stuff. And Beta Ray Bill and Thor knock each other unconscious. Very WWE. There's like a 10 count almost. And Beta Ray Bill wakes up first. and saves Thor, who's about to like go over this lava flow, and because he feels he's like too worthy of an opponent. And Beta Ray Bill is an inherently good guy. And so Odin is stuck at this point and says, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a hammer of your own. Stormbreaker has all the powers of Mjolnir, and you're going to do your thing. Thor, you go do your thing. And from there, Beta Ray Bill kind of became a cosmic character and lived in the universe doing stuff. Like right now, he just popped up in that Thanos book that we read by Jim Starlin, latest Thanos graphic novel. And he's sort of a big, powerful cosmic character that only shows up when things are really, really bad. He's Space Thor, and I love him so, so much. And I still, to this day, don't think anyone drew Beta Ray Bill as good as Walt Simonson, or ever will. Ever. He's got to be one of the hardest characters in the Marvel Universe to draw.
Yeah, yeah, I'll give you that. Now, not all of the Corbinites look like horses, right?
No.
It was the surgery that made him look that way.
Yes, because like after he got Stormbreaker, this was at a time where Thor was still very much tied. He was tied to Donald Blake. So Donald Blake had the cane that he would smash and he would turn into Thor, right? Same thing would happen. He would smash Stormbreaker and turn back into a Corbinite, which is just sort of like a big guy with no nose at all. He was kind of orange and he had no nose and no face. He had a brief love affair with Sif. It was adorable. Oh man, I love Beta Ray Bill. Far and away my favorite Z-list character.
You know what? I'd argue that Beta Ray Bill is not a Z-list character.
How do you figure that? The horse face Thor, most people have no idea who that dude is.
Yeah, but with comic fans, Beta Ray Bill is like hugely popular.
I mean, I get that, but like you just named Speedball as your Z-list character. Speedball has had Speedball had his own regular series for a while. Beta Ray Bill has never had a series. Like
Speedball had his own terrible series for 10 issues.
I'm not saying it was good. I'm saying he had one.
There was a Beta Ray Bill miniseries, Stormbreaker.
Yeah, no, there were miniseries. He's never had his own monthly because Beta Ray Bill couldn't sustain his own monthly because he's a Z-list character.
Beta Ray Bill is just Thor.
He's not just Thor, buddy. We just had this conversation, okay? We learned what separated him. That was also kind of the first time that they introduced the idea that other people could lift Thor's hammer. And it sort of opened up like a whole new world, which eventually went to a terrible place with the Thor core.
I love Beta Ray Bill. I'm sticking with my thought that he's not a Z-lister, but that's okay. I mean, he's certainly not an A-lister.
No way.
We can agree on that.
Yeah.
We can agree on that.
Guys, thank you so much for all your calls. And I say guys, because we're not getting calls from girls anymore. I don't know what we did. We upset all our female callers. All of them.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. What do we have to do?
All two of them.
100% of our two female callers are upset with us. We need to get some more lady power on this show. I demand it. Please, ladies, if you're listening, call in. It's too much of a boys club right now. We want your opinions. And we don't have a show without them. Seriously. Thank you so much to everybody that called. As always, a ton of fun. It's your show, and it's only as good as you dudes and lady dudes decide to make it. So give us a call. Joe Patrick has already posted another question of the week. What is the latest question, Joe?
The new question of the week is, what are your favorite and least favorite examples of a superhero becoming a supervillain?
That's a good one.
This is, of course, one answer each. Get it done in those 3 minutes.
We want hero turned heel. That's the question. Lots of fun.
Heel turn.
I love it. I love it. We will, of course, have another episode of The Two-Headed Nerd popping up real quick here this weekend. Thank you so much for joining us. Please come back and play again. We love you all. This is The Two-Headed Nerd, signing off.
Hey, nerds. If you've got an answer to the question of the week, you can call THN at the Ziggurat direct line and leave your message at 402-819-4894. Or using the Skype username, Two-Headed Nerd. And if you're too shy or have just too much to say at once, you can write your message under the Answer of the Week section of the THN forums.